Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's a throwdown on Thursdays. We're doing this probably for another few weeks and stuff. It's the Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me. Love him dearly. Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, 2,500 miles to the west of him, producing this, playing a little co-host too, as well. 347-205-9631. 60 minutes goes by quick. So if you happen to miss it, tell all your friends as you're picking up steam now with 97. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Doc, the threes. How are you?
Sure.
How can people get a hold of you? And, man, there's a lot to talk about today. We'll recap a lot of the stuff we've talked about, you know, this year. And also, I don't care where we move this show. These people seem to follow you wherever you go.
Boy, I thank you, Mark, and I thank you, listeners, for the loyalty. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity that we have here. And, you know, Mark, if I can, you know, people can get a hold of me at gjrmd308@outlook.com. You know, we're doing well. This time of year in western Pennsylvania is phenomenal. You know, here we are October 18th, 19th. The weather's in the 60s. You know, the phenomenal thing is the foliage. And, you know, you can see pictures of that on most of the weather channels, that the colors are just radiant, from the oranges to the yellows to the reds.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal. And you're going up into the mountains, looking at these gorgeous mountains here in western Pennsylvania that are covered with trees. So it's a gorgeous time of year, Mark. It's going to get
well,
cold.
Not only that, yeah, I want to wish you a happy birthday because I know you had a birthday a couple days ago, so I just want to wish you a happy birthday, and I know as the listeners will get that one out. And also, I'll kind of feel a little bit of my Pittsburgh roots. The Steelers will be out here. I'll cover that game against the Rams Sunday, so I'm feeling a little giddy about that one.
Yeah, I think the game's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon here in Pittsburgh, so it's probably about a noonish game for you, isn't it?
1:05 to be exact, 4:05 your time. But, boy, the last time you think about the Steelers was 1979 when I graduated high school, and they came out here and they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl 31-19, and Terry Bradshaw and the crew, and boy, oh boy, that was a great year in Pittsburgh in 79. The Steelers had won the World Series, City of Champs. I still got a T-shirt somewhere around here, Pittsburgh City of Champs, so that's a blessing in itself. But what I want to do is recap the previous things. And we were talking about in the pre-chat about, you know, my granddaughter that had her tonsils removed last week, how painful that is, kind of lethargic, taking the antibiotics and stuff and, eating the ice chips and, you know, it's one of those things where you can lose weight if you're not, you know, eating normally.
Right, you do, right.
But, and you can get weak in some instances. Take us through that and how important, and you know what, to tell you the truth, I don't even remember if my tonsils were ever pulled or not, but she was getting a lot of strep throats.
Well,
and they finally decided, let's pull it, and they did it.
Wonderful. And it was needed. They did the right thing, and your granddaughter's going to get through this well. And how old is your granddaughter, Mark?
18. And let me ask you, with your experience, with your knowledge, and I'm going to get to some of these listeners here momentarily that are pounding in right now. When is it needed to take the tonsils out? When you get a lot of the strep throats? When it becomes a problem? I wouldn't know. You're the expert. You know all these things. What would be the thing to the listeners?
Sure, I'll be glad, Mark. I'd like to start maybe talking about what tonsils are, if I can go to the beginning, you know, as we like to do. Typically, the tonsils are on the sides of our throat. If you look in, right on the sides of the tongue, and there are two of them. They're called pharyngeal tonsils. Just by the way, there's a second set of tonsils at the back of our tongues. So we actually have two sets of tonsils, pharyngeal tonsils and something called lingual tonsils. The pharyngeal tonsils are the ones we normally take out. Along with that, our listeners probably have heard the word adenoid, that when they go in for surgery, they take out tonsils and adenoids. So adenoids are very similar tissue as tonsils. They're in a different location, and that location is the back of the nose. So the tonsils are in the mouth, size of the throat. Adenoids are back of the nose. And, Mark, going on, you know, you're asking, well, why do we take them? When do we take them?
Yeah.
There are two basic indications, and those indications, number one, is the strep throat. You know, if someone has ongoing strep, you know, the numbers change. You know, different studies show different things. But usually a standard is if we have a kiddo, a young adult that has three bouts of strep per year for 2 to 3 years, or if they have 4 to 5 bouts in 1 year, then we think about taking the tonsils out. The other indication is something called airway obstruction. And I think we've all heard the term sleep apnea. And we, you know, we've had speakers on this program talking about it. But airway obstruction, when the tonsils and adenoids are very large, they block the airway. And usually, you know our kiddos are in trouble if they're tossing, turning, snoring, restless. Another symptom that we see, by the way, is bedwetting, which, you know, is really interesting that our kiddos can have bedwetting secondary to tonsillar obstruction. And that's kind of, you know, where they are. Now, question is, what do the tonsils and adenoids do? Well, tonsils and adenoids, and what I tell my patients, they have soldiers in them, and these soldiers fight infection. And when down the road we see that these kiddos are getting more and more infected, the bacteria have beat the soldiers. And then the bacteria is living in the tonsils. That's when it's time, Mark, to take them out. And, you know, usually tonsillectomy is something that we do from about 6 years old till about 18 or 19, predominantly. Now, we do take tonsils out, you know, in younger adults, older adults. Occasionally, we'll even take them out in senior citizens when the indications are there. And, you know, again, I don't want to get into it tonight, but we talk about tonsillar cancers. Tonsils can involve cancer as well. But tonight we're going to talk about your granddaughter, about infections in the tonsils and when you take them out. And, you know, usually the bacteria that is causative and most serious is strep. And the strep bacteria, you know, is one of those buggers that kiddos pick up. They can live in the tonsils and cause harm. And, you know, the fear of leaving tonsils that have strep, the strep can cause a heart problem. And I think we've heard the term, right, subacute bacterial endocarditis. Strep can damage the heart valves. Strep can also damage the kidneys, where, you know, the kidneys, the kiddos may have some blood in their urine. The other, of course, is we get joint pain, ankle pain, hip pain from the immunologic responses that we see. And we can also see a strep rash in our patient. So it's something, Mark, you know, with regard to that variety of symptoms, they're broad. Usually, you know, we can go ahead, and again, I know you probably your granddaughter had tonsillar cultures where they put a swab in the throat, right, and they check to see what the bacteria is. Now, ongoing infection does not have to be only strep. It can be other bacteria, but strep is the most serious overall. And then that, you know, again, meeting the criteria, having taken antibiotics, not getting well, we start to think about tonsillectomy.
Let me get to some of these questions.
Sure.
Albert from Poway coming in says, guys, I like your Thursday show too, man. It's great. Now I got, if you guys flip it and everything, I can still hear you. I don't miss your shows. I want to ask a question. What happens if tonsils are not treated? What are the complications that can develop?
Excellent question. And, you know, as far as if we don't treat it, then we see sick children, you know, or a sick adult, sore throats, all right? They have ongoing sore throats. They develop pus pockets in the tonsils. Mark, they also, especially with some children, they develop upset stomachs due to the fact that the tonsils weep. They make snot that drains into the stomach, causing an upset stomach. And usually when I have families come in that talk about tonsillectomy, I'll ask, you know, has this kiddo have an upset stomach in the morning? And mom will say, yeah, you know what? Every morning he wakes up, says his belly's sick. That's due to this putrefied drainage from the tonsils. So it is something, yes, untreated, it can affect the heart, the kidneys, and the joints. So it needs to be treated. The other thing that can happen now, if we have an untreated tonsillar infection, is something called a peritonsillar abscess. Now, what is that about? Well, the bacteria can eat through the tonsil and into the space behind the tonsil and the muscles of the throat. And it leads to a lot of pus, dead tissue that accumulates in that space. And, you know, of course, these patients come in, severe sore throat, severe throat pain. Mark, they can also have dehydration because they can't drink. That can be one of the consequences of untreated tonsillar infections. So it's a great question, and it's something that with an ongoing sore throat or recurrent sore throat, our listeners need to get care. Thank you.
Yeah, let me get Robin from Warren, Ohio. She says, well, Doc, how do you know if your tonsils are okay? That's another good one.
Sure, another good question. And, you know, Robin, with regard to that, usually these things have symptoms. And even though, you know, you look maybe in your child's mouth and you see the tonsils are somewhat large, that's not necessarily an indication to take them out. We usually need to deal with, you know, what are the symptoms? If you're not having that, we talked about sleep apnea or airway obstruction and snoring. If you're not having a sore throat, all right, and the child is eating, doesn't have that upset stomach in the morning, potentially the tonsils are okay, all right? But you watch, and you want to see, you know, overall if symptoms progress. And that's what we're after, progression of symptoms. So if you're not having any symptoms, super. But just keep an eye on it.
Let me take one more, and then we'll start breaking it. Another subject. Lance goes, does fevers play into this whole thing, too? Because he's heard fevers can play into tonsils.
Sure. Fevers, absolutely. And, you know, with regard to having an infection or an inflammation in our body, you know, it can be from the tonsils. But, indeed, a fever indicates a more acute infection that overall they have something going on. And we know that, you know, when regard to certain signs of inflammation, swelling, redness, temperature, pus, malaise, not feeling good, you need to seek some help. So it is something, fever, absolutely, and sore throat, you've got a tonsillar problem.
Ah, great one. Let me bring in Alex, and he is coming in from Sugarland, Texas. Listen to the show quite a bit. Alex, thank you very much. More or less says we lost Suzanne Summers this past week.
Yes.
23 years battling breast cancer. That is simply unheard of, to battle breast cancer that long and still live. Are you guys shocked? Well, first of all, I'm shocked, but let me turn it over to the doc on that one, Alex, and thanks for chiming in from Sugarland.
You know, what a loss, and, you know, what a survivor. That gal was a superstar. She really recreated herself, and even with the breast cancer, continued to work and be productive. And she generated a lot of money, you know, with her Thighmaster. She helped a lot of women. But overall, what my thoughts were when I was listening to that, the cancer probably was never completely eradicated. You know, there had to have been some pockets of cancer that her therapy never killed. And over time, they continued to grow. I know she had recurrent treatments for cancer, but indeed, they never went ahead and completely eradicated her cancer. And that's what killed her overall. But no, very good question, but what a loss. What a fighter. She really was to be commended for fighting all these years and still being productive. Mark, is that your take on her life as well?
I couldn't have said it any better. I'll ditto that one, too. And, yeah, you know, when you think of Three's Company, the only one still living right now would be Joyce DeWitt. We lost John Ritter years ago, and, yeah, what a fighter. And unbelievable, the sitcoms back then. And it's just, it was amazing.
Yeah,
how
popular those sitcoms were. And they were, and those people became stars. Right, and went on to other things in their lives. She was a fighter. She was a fighter.
Yeah, Dalen from Chelmsford, Mass. Chimes in a lot. He said the other day he had an ear infection. It was his middle ear, the air-filled space behind the eardrum that contains vibrating bones. He said he can't figure out how he did that, and, you know, it's went to the doctors and everything, so he's getting better now, but... Wow, I haven't ever heard of that. I've heard of maybe rupturing your eardrum, but getting an ear infection like that.
Yeah. Where was Galen calling us from?
Chelmsford, Mass. Chelmsford, Massachusetts.
Sure. And, you know, Mark, what we see, you know, we talk about ear infections, and I go into a little bit of anatomy. You know, we have the outer ear, which is the ear canal. We then have the area he's referring to, which is the middle ear. And that consists of the eardrum, the three hearing bones, but also something called the eustachian tube or the drainage tube. You know, this time of year, we're going through change of season. And Massachusetts has a lot of allergies, just like Pennsylvania does. He may have developed some inflammation within the nose, possibly, and the eustachian tube on one side. So the eustachian tube, which is a drainage tube, gets swollen, gets clogged, fluid builds up, doesn't drain, and then bacteria get there, and, you know, he has an infection. Fortunately, it sounds like he didn't have a rupture, but you're right, that would be the next step in this disease if it's untreated. So I'm glad he got it better. And he may want to have his allergies checked. That may be the cause of this overall.
Yeah, and you know what? Just to play off of what he's coming in on, you know, I had a friend that ruptured his eardrum and or something pertaining to that. He did it on an airplane. It was, I don't know, was it the altitude or, you know, where the ears pop, and it really messed him up a little, but... I mean, I've heard of things where you go to a concert, Doc, and, you know, you got to put stuff in your ears, maybe the loudness of it and the disciples of it and all that. But on an airplane, I had a friend, and, man, oh, man, he had to really go see the doc on that one. But is that a common thing?
Yes. You know, if I can follow up a little bit here.
Yeah.
you know, at a concert, you have something called acoustic concussion, which means the sound waves can actually damage the eardrum, and they affect the hearing bones and the inner ear. You know, people will get away from some concerts and say, my ears are ringing, because there's been some acoustic concussion to the inner ear. So I think wearing cotton in the ears, wearing earplugs, staying away from the speakers is a real good plan if you're going to a concert, because the decibels are incredible. They're over probably 95, 100 decibels if you're sitting close to the stages. So you still want to be very cautious there. But the sound waves themselves can rupture your eardrum. You know, we'll see that in the military also, Mark. You know, we have soldiers working around howitzers, tanks, et cetera. And I see it frequently that they'll come in from, you know, being on military exercises, and they'll have a ruptured eardrum, infected, and they have a lot of ringing. So we need to be careful. Again, that's an organ we need to protect, you know, with regard to earplugs, earmuffs. Mark, and the same thing with, you know, shooting. People going and shooting.
Yeah, rifle range.
Rifle range, trap shooting, you know, indoor shooting. The decibels are extremely high and, again, very damaging overall. You know, if we go on. Now, go ahead.
Yeah.
We, you know, if we talk about rupture.
I was going to say, is it common in airplanes where people, do you see a lot of people that have done a cross-country flight or just done a flight, and that popping sound can cause an infection or a popping in their eardrum?
Right. And, you know, again, just usually the difficult time for our ears, and we use the word equilibration, where the pressures behind the eardrum are the same as on the outside of the eardrum. And that's usually upon descent. When the plane's going down, there's disequilibrium of the pressure, and there's more pressure behind the eardrum than on the outside. So therefore, as that pressure builds up, it actually tears the eardrum. And I'll see two things. I'll see a ruptured eardrum from a flight, but I also see vertigo or imbalance. I've had people that have gotten off a flight that stagger. They have to be taken to the emergency room or some acute care area so this vertigo stops because of the concussion and the pressurization of the airplane. But it can happen. Has to do with our Eustachian tube that's not equilibrating the pressures properly. And, Mark, you know, when you fly, have you ever heard, you know, babies crying and screaming when the plane is descending? Right, because that ear pressure is tremendous for those little guys. And they can't equilibrate. And usually what we tell our mothers is make sure that either you're, if you're nursing the baby, have the baby feeding upon descent, or a pacifier to suck on so that they go ahead, that Eustachian tube equilibrates and the pressures are the same on both sides of the eardrum. Our adults, Mark, a little tip, chewing gum upon descent. And again, chewing the gum actually opens our Eustachian tube. You know, typically 1,000 times a day, our Eustachian tube should open and drain. However, there are times that the Eustachian tube does not open as many times, and the pressures build up. Chewing gum allows more equilibration and more equalization of pressure. So if you have an ear problem where your ears pop, chew gum on the plane. All right. Give the baby, you know, some type of a pacifier, or have the baby breastfeed as the plane is descending. Just a couple of tips.
Yeah, that makes sense in more ways than one. You know, when you basically break it down like that. Bill from Bellingham, Washington, chiming in. He says he is 67 years old. He goes, What are the most common health problems when you hit past 60, and how can he improve his health? Wow, that's a good one. Because I'll be 62 next month. Yeah.
Well, you know, we have to kind of look at, now that's a very, very broad question.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not sure of what his health status is now. But normally, from, say, an ear, nose, and throat standpoint, two things. Usually we develop hearing loss as we get in our 60s. All right? We have our hair cells are damaged in our ears, and we start to say, huh?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
typically in our 60s. You know, the other thing that happens in our 60s now, which is benign for the most part, we become more allergic. People develop more sinus problems, post-nasal drip, more asthma. Because as we all age, we develop more of the chemistries to make us allergic. And that's what we see, again, mostly. Now, there can be a variety of other symptoms. You know, is this gentleman a smoker? Does he chew? You know, has he had a heart attack? Has he had a stroke? So, that you know, Mark, it's just a real big question. But the
well,
basic
you know, and you
hearing
bring,
loss
I would
analysis.
Think, yeah, no, you bring up interesting points. And I would even probably, because knowing some of my friends, and maybe this will help Bill, I would think cataracts would play a big part in the 60s too, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Now we're, sound,
so
now we're sounding like a band here trying to find the best concerts of the 70s. But, no, I would think cataracts, no pun intended, would play a big part because you hear a lot about cataracts as you get into your
sure.
60s.
You're right. And, you know, again, those lenses do opacify, and that's part of the aging. But typically, Mark, some of our patients that have that have more comorbidities. Maybe they're diabetic. Maybe they have arthritis, right? And maybe they have a variety of other maladies as well. But, yeah, if he's going into his 60s and he's healthy, you know, he hasn't had a heart attack, he hasn't had a stroke, he's not taking a lot of blood pressure medicine, he's not diabetic. You know, the thing is you want to keep this organism healthy. And I think we've talked about it, Mark, on the show, where we talk about exercise. We talk about, you know, again, avoiding the alcohol and good nutrition, where we are eating, you know, good foods, cutting down on the sugar content,
yep.
you know, and eating that kind of a thing. Good hydration, so we're flushing our salivary glands out. We're flushing our kidneys out. They're able to function well. So, you know, there are things that we need to maintain, and we should avoid a lot of the pitfalls, you know, of older age, where we have some people that, you know, have done a lot of drinking, a lot of smoking, you know.
Right.
They eat terrible diets. You know, they stay away from the veggies and the fruits. And, Mark, along with that, if I can just elaborate, you know, as
yeah.
our dental health, you know, we want to keep our teeth. And the reason being is that overall, that's the first stage of digestion. You know, we see a lot of people that overall have digestive problems and have to be on their foods, you know, sugary foods, pastries, the breads, cookies, cakes, ice cream, because they can't chew. So we want to keep these teeth. If we've lost them, let's make sure we get them replaced. And that's a part of good health, getting into our 60s and 70s. So we need to
right.
chew.
And not only that, not only what you brought up in your 60s, I would also think, because you brought up, you know, the watch out for the salt and sugar and stuff like that, but I would aim for at least a half an hour, maybe walking, yoga, swimming. Just keep yourself moving on a routine each day.
Without a doubt. You know, what our country is trying to do today in some of the exercise programs for our children in school is 60 minutes of exercise a day.
Yeah.
All right? To keep our kids healthy, growing, muscles moving, and to decrease obesity. And I think the same is with adults. You know, you need to go ahead. If you can't do 60 minutes of, say, walking like Mark suggested, do 30 minutes. You don't
yeah.
have to do a marathon, but you have to move. And, you know, what does that do? That strengthens our heart, that helps the blood return. It doesn't stay stagnant in our feet and ankles. That helps to purify the blood through the lungs, the kidneys, the liver. So we need to do that. And, you know, a killer for us is that if we start to get stagnant and we're in a wheelchair, we're sitting in a chair all day, if we lose that momentum with motion, that really is a killer for us, cutting the number of days of our life that we have. So we want to move. We want to eat well. We want to avoid the bad things. And let's go from there. So go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you're right, because I don't smoke and I don't drink. And
yes.
I walk 2 miles. I try to get in at least a day if I can.
Wow.
And, you know, and what I would tell the people out there, and, Doc, you could back me up on this, if you
sure.
live close to work and you're going like an 8-to-5 job and it's still light out and everything, and you're within a mile or maybe 3/4 of a mile to go to work and you don't have to dress up as much, I would just, you know, basically get that walk to work, get that cardio going. And
sure.
I would think that would help them too, because now you at least, you know, you're working, but you're still getting your exercise in by the time you work. And I will tell you this, Doc, and you can quote me on this. If you get used to something like that, you will not break a sweat because your body's used to it. It's kind of like if you're used to getting up in the morning, you could get away without
sure.
setting an alarm because your body is telling you get up at this time. So you, yep. It's like baseball players. You know, they get
yeah.
their body used to, you know, a 6-month rigor or something, or football players. Am I right on all those fronts?
Yes, you know, you are. And, you know, I think, Mark, if we're talking about, you know, our bodies, and, you know, Doc Talk is
yeah.
about health and about
yep.
good health and their habits. And, you know, the better our health habits are, the better our body responds. And, Mark, that really goes into longevity, all right? If our heart is working well, our arteries aren't clogged, you know, we're not smoking, breaking down the little alveoli in our lungs, our arteries are carrying blood to the brain, Mark, we're going to live an awful lot longer and live well. And, again, avoid that stroke. Avoid that heart attack. Avoid Alzheimer's. You know, it takes good care of our body, no matter where we are in life. Let's turn
right.
our lives around and try to incorporate good habits. And I think
well,
what
the listeners,
you're saying is
yeah.
absolutely correct.
Yep, the listeners are coming out. Let me get Jessica from Bend, Oregon, who's coming in from a friend for the first time listening. Jessica, thank
wow.
you very much.
Thank you.
She goes, where does the mental decline come in this? Dementia and you know, your vocabulary knowledge, your long-term memory, does that basically stay stable through your 60s? That's an excellent question.
Well,
I didn't even think of that.
Sure. Well, you know what? We all want to keep our wits about us, you know, as well as we talk about our sensory organs, meaning that our vision, our hearing, our smell, our taste, our cerebral function. It all depends on good health. You know, if we have a problem with dementia and where we're getting forgetful is our brains aren't getting enough oxygen. If we're breathing well and the lungs are working well, we get good oxygen flow to our brain. That's what it needs to keep it thinking. So, again, the exercise, all right, you know, getting away from the nicotine, getting away from the alcohol, getting away from toxic things like that in our lives keeps these tissues healthy. And again, as long as we're supporting them nutritionally and doing the right things, you know, if you look at each of our systems, Mark, you know, our cardiovascular system, which is the heart, the lungs, the blood vessels, if we can keep, you know, good oxygen flow into our lungs, then we get good oxygen into our heart, good oxygen into the brain.
Yep.
All right? That's what our organs need. And then if we, you know, have enough hydration, we flush all the products of metabolism out of our body. All right? They don't stagger. Keeps us from getting diabetes where the insulin is not being produced. And, you know, it's one thing after another, but indeed, let's take good care of ourselves. And, you know, it's something that there's, you know, millions of books on health, and there's programs on health everywhere you go. Every exercise book, I think, in the country talks about, you know, how to use exercise, but also how to use nutrition and then do exercise to keep our bodies working. And it's no mystery. You know, there's really not a big mystery with this. And, you know, if you want to do supplements, you know, you need to study about it. But there's no mystery. You know, if you're eating, you're eating veggies, you're eating fruits, your body needs those. And there's nothing hard about it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're right, you're eating the ice cream, if you're eating the cookies, the cakes, you know, all the desserts,
right,
all that sugar and all those carbs aren't good for our body. They're not good for our brain. They're not good for our kidneys. They ruin our pancreas. So it's a matter, let's be smart. Let's think about what we're eating. Maybe let's do meal planning. And, you know, Mark, if I can, just on this topic, we're also planning to have a nutritionist on the program to talk a little bit about ways to prepare foods ahead of time, you know, and so there's no crisis management here. You know, how do you prepare things? You know, when do you, you know, if you go shopping, what are the things you can get that'll last a couple of nights that you can prepare for the snacks at work so you're not eating those high-calorie snacks? Let's get rid of obesity. That's a killer. Let's cut down the sugars. And you're right, let's do the exercise. So we want to help our listeners, but we've got to be able to implement certain rules, you know, in doing that. And, you know, you mentioned about walking to work. That's great. If one can't do that, there has to be safe areas close to their home, whether it's a park, a sidewalk, right? You know, the other thing is in your home, you know, walking up and down the stairs, if it's safe, you know, several times a day helps your thigh muscles, helps your circulation, and helps your heart. And, you know, most of us all have stairs in our home. So it is something that we can do. And, I mean, the other thing is the Internet has all kind of healthful tips that if we're going to study about, you know, the stock market or a variety of other things, let's study about our health. How can we take care of ourselves to be productive, but also live a painless, free life and, again, feel good that you want to go out and do things? Go ahead, Mark.
Exactly. Jerry from Woonsocket, Rhode Island, chiming in. He said, you know what? He notices the skin changes. Your skin turns a little drier, itchier. You don't sweat as much, and the wounds on your skin take a little longer to heal. I didn't realize that maybe in the 60s. You kind of see that maybe the 70s. But I don't know. Am I right or wrong on what Jerry's coming in from Woonsocket, Rhode Island? Skin changes in the 60, when you turn after 60.
Well, sure. Mark, you know, again, skin changes, you know, that's a very good indication of our health. And realize that, you know, the skin breathes, the skin sweats. And if, you know, you're not hydrating it and it's dry, it tends not to be as protective. And we, of course, see the skin cancers. We'll see, you know, wounds that don't heal as well because the circulation's not as good. But, you know, you talk about hydration, and usually we talk about hydration in, say, bottles of water. How much are you drinking a day? You know, I have some people say, oh, I hate water, I don't want to drink it. But indeed, there are some flavored waters. You know, it's something, you know, as far as part of our health care, drink water. All right, now, you have to make sure that you're not having a kidney problem or anything like that, overloading your kidneys. But a normal individual should be able to drink 3 to 4 16-ounce bottles of water a day. And, you know, their skin will stay moist. You know, Mark, we want to sweat. sweating is a good function of our bodies. And if one is not hydrated, the sweating falls dramatically. So, you know, hydration, you know, peeing a lot can be a very helpful function of health. Now, again, there are certain limits that we talk about, whether one's diabetic or has other comorbidities. But indeed, in a healthier individual, drinking water is very positive health experience.
Yeah, and you know, to follow up on all these things, Doc, just hearing these comments from these listeners, and I'm getting a little education in here too. Where
sure,
is fatigue? Yeah, I mean, this is what's remarkable of it, because we can give these listeners what they want, and then, you know, just hearing you, you know, answer the questions of these guys has me thinking, where does fatigue come in on this? Because fatigue must play a big part, you know, am I right?
Well, you know, if we talk about fatigue, you have to look at thyroid function. How is the thyroid gland working? How are we metabolizing? All right? And, you know, overall, a lot of fatigue, the fact we don't have good nutrition. And, you know, we need good nutrition. And we need to make sure, you know, that overall our hormones are all in balance. You know, if your blood sugars are high, or if, you know, you're urinating a lot of sugar, number one, that's definitely an issue. You know, if your thyroid is out of function, if you're not having, you know, a lot of protein in your diet, you know, we can talk about fatigue, Mark, as extreme tiredness. It could be mental or physical exertion or, you know, illness. And, you know, it's a matter that overall, you know, stress could be a cause of it. You know? And so, I mean, it's not one of those things we know everything. But, you know, as far as potential, yeah, stress can cause us to be fatigued. Not eating properly can cause fatigue. Not having the right hormones can lead to fatigue. Not sleeping well at night, Mark. You know, again, and the list goes on. But, you know, as far as that, if we're in a good, we call it homeostasis with our body, that things are in balance, we should see exhaustion, fatigue actually go away. And, you know, and Mark, the other thing with fatigue, you know, another is mental or emotional fatigue.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, we all have to deal with for many, many reasons. And, you know, if one is depressed, you know, they're apathetic, they're very irritable, they're cynical. Yeah, they could have some mental fatigue that really they've lost the joy of life. So, you know, fatigue is an issue, Mark. And I wasn't prepared to get into all that tonight, but
definitely
it could be something we can talk about.
Oh, my God. But you know, we got Philip coming in from Flint, Michigan, basically says to combat fatigue, the vitamin for that would probably be B1 or get some iron in you really combat that. He basically says, God, this is really, I mean, we were thinking what we were going to talk about, recap the topics we had, and then this thing went on a whole different course, and it's kind of blowing up in more ways than one. But he said the 60 is the new 50. People are reinventing themselves now. They neither feel young nor old, and they're looking for new meaning in their life. Great, you know, bringing that up, Philip,
sure,
from Flint, Michigan, and I got to say the same thing. I mean, if you're healthy, we're talking about walking, we're talking about climbing stairs, we're talking about getting rid of the sugar and the saturated foods and all that, keeping yourself upbeat. I would think, and I don't know the percentage of us guys in their 60s, but I remember going to my reunion about 4 years ago, and Doc, the men looked like they were shot out, the women looked great, and maybe it's just letting themselves go. I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's the alcohol. Maybe it's just, you know, not eating right and seeing some of my buddies that I went to school with. Some of them, you know, if they just decided to walk a little and they kind of think to themselves, well, Mark's over here walking, but at the same time,
sure.
You're keeping yourself active, but, 60 to new 50, is that a clear thing, what Philip's saying out of Flint, Michigan?
Sure. A couple of things, Mark, on that topic. It's about intention. What with your body, with your mind, with your life, what's your intention? Do you want to have a healthy life? Are you in this to help other people? Are you in this to go ahead and be successful? It's about intention. We see people, an awful lot of patients that I see, Mark, today are on antidepressants, for a variety of drugs and maladies. So it is something, that overall is a problem. Now, reciprocally, realize this, that people today that, you're right, that they're 60, the new 50, et cetera, they didn't work in the coal mines. They didn't work in the steel mills. For the most part, they weren't involved in World War II, maybe Vietnam, but a lot of those toxic areas contaminated these guys' bodies and their minds. And, overall, because very seldomly do you hear the word black lungs anymore.
Yeah.
Many years ago when I was just starting out, that's what we treated, black lung. We had a lot of people from the coal mines, the steel mills, with lung damage, asbestosis. Today, Mark, you don't see that. We don't have those industries in our world cause those health problems. So I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. Mark, I think there's a lot more knowledge available to people about taking care of their health. Mark, what about smoking, the tobacco industry?
Yeah.
How are we trying to prevent that? What we're saying about people smoking. So we're trying to eliminate that. And again, what about labeling on our foods? So we identify problem foods or problem situations that may hurt us. What about the drugs regime we have today? We have a lot of very good drugs to help our health. What about chemotherapeutic and cancer agents? That's improving. So I think, Mark, what you're saying is correct. I think that, that whole perception is going to improve as long as you want it to. If you want to take care of yourself, Mark, you can. And there's a lot of hope out there and help to do that. But again, there's always people that really see the, the glass half empty and live their life in a depressed manner.
Yeah. Kenneth, let me take one more and then we'll kind of recap this because we're coming in the last 10 minutes of a thing. But man, we could go for another hour and a half. But Kenneth from Peoria, Arizona, always chimes in. He goes, another common condition that you guys haven't brought up, and I've heard this, kind of
sure.
creeps up in the 50s, and it wreaks havoc on your health, is diabetes. Do you realize more than 37 million Americans have diabetes? I didn't realize that it was that high, but, boy, Kenneth's bringing something to the arsenal tonight on this show, Doc.
Diabetes is a very serious ailment. Now, there's new drugs to help control it. People can monitor their blood sugars a lot better, a lot more accurate than they once could. Our health from that standpoint should improve because the improving of technology and access to health care, Mark. So he's absolutely right. Diabetes, as we know, can cause neuropathies, which affects our nerve endings and our feet, circulation. I don't think I've seen a diabetic amputation the last several years, where many years ago we had people losing toes, their feet to diabetes.
Yeah.
Blindness, is another factor that we see with diabetics. So diabetes is still a very serious disease, but I think we have more answers and more access to that health care today. So I do appreciate that question.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Let me just take the last one because he's a regular here. Steve from Corvallis coming in. Varicose veins are another big part as you get older in your legs.
Yeah.
He's been battling that, and sometimes it can get even worse if you don't get a handle on that. I've been out and I've been around pool sides, and I've seen people where it looks bad, where I don't know on that particular thing when it gets worse, because you can kind of combat that. It's not a health issue, more or less, is it, Doc? I'm not too familiar with that.
A little bit, you know. Now, again, varicose veins typically refer to the long veins in our legs. And, you know, overall what's happening is that, you know, there's valves in the veins that control blood flow. When the valves start to degenerate, blood is not being channeled properly, and then what happens is these blood vessels start to stretch. And so that, you know, overall, they tend to accumulate blood and not push the blood back to the heart. And that's what veins do. You know, arteries carry the blood to our legs, our arms. We say peripherally. That's good, fresh blood. The return to the heart is through the veins. And if our veins aren't working properly, then it does affect the heart, our circulation, our oxygenation. A lot of people have that because of very poor exercise. They haven't strengthened their legs, arm muscles or leg muscles, and these valves and these veins break down. Mark, usually this leads to clotting, you know, in the veins. And, you know, people talk about deep vein thrombosis, where you get clots deep in the leg. These people tend to need anticoagulated. They need to have their blood thin. It becomes a very complex problem that does require treatment. But, Mark, it's one of those things. If we're in better health and we're exercising, we keep our muscles working and contracting, we can sure help to prevent that from becoming a very serious issue. But it's an excellent question.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about that and looking for health, and I'm thinking of drinks, and a lot of people might shoot these things down, and then we'll recap this show. But I'm always thinking cranberry juice, orange juice. But a lot of people might say, well, Mark, that has a lot of sugar in it. But vitamin C you're getting, cranberry juice, clearing out the kidneys, I would imagine, and stuff like that. Would them be two great things to consider, whether it's in the morning or later in the day?
As far as I know, we're running out of time, and those are great questions. Cranberry juice is good for kidney filtration. Now, realize if you're diabetic, cranberry juice has about 35 grams of sugar per 16-ounce bottle, which is that's like seven little sugar packets in, you know, a glass. So it's an awful lot of sugar, Mark. Same thing with orange juice. Orange juice is almost like Coca-Cola. If you look at a bottle of orange juice that they sell, you know, at the grocery stores, 10, 12 ounces, 35 or 40 grams of sugar. Coke has probably about the same amount. So that overall, we got to watch it. If we need vitamin
even,
C.
Just to follow up on that, let's say you get the 100% pure orange juice. Is there a little bit of difference where the packets would be much lower than what we're looking at, or it'd be about the same?
Mark, it's the same. You know, if you look at the packaging real quickly, they all say 100% orange juice. If you look at the ingredients, they're oranges and water. That's all that's in there. Then you look at the sugar content, 35 grams per bottle. Take a look at it. Or as much as you have some vitamin C, but real quickly, if you need vitamin C, go buy a bottle of vitamin C, 500 milligrams, taking one tablet a day. To hell with the sugar. It's not in the vitamin C.
Good quote. Hey, as we wrap this thing up, you and I were trying to recap, like I said earlier, past shows, but this took a course all on its own, and man, we have approached the 500 level almost, but it's just amazing when we can break things down, elaborate it, the people come in here and start throwing things out, and they kind of go
sure.
to what you have done, ear, nose, and throat specialist. When
yes,
you
sir.
Recap this, take a couple minutes to recap this, because we've covered a wide variety of subjects here tonight.
I'd be glad to. Let me go ahead, Mark. I just want to thank our listeners. You know, Mark, I've been doing this with you for almost 100 shows now.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot. We've covered an awful lot of topics. We've had a lot of excellent guests. So I don't know if you were aware of that or not, that number.
Yeah.
You know, to wrap up, I think tonsillectomy, I can wrap that up very briefly. There's two indications for tonsillectomy, chronic infection and airway obstruction. Typically, the procedure is something called a tonsillectomy, where we go through the mouth with the child asleep, use something like a fine-tip laser to remove the tonsil from the underlying muscular tissue. Usually the operation is about a 20-minute operation. Mark, I also inject a little bit of Novocaine into these operative areas. So when our kiddos wake up, they have discomfort but not a lot of pain. And,
exactly.
You know, we initially, again, they're usually an outpatient. They've got to eat two or three popsicles for me. They've got to drink at least one bottle of Gatorade. I don't care what flavor it is. Gatorade now has a lot of electrolytes but a lot of sugar, but I need to make sure they're getting nutrition. And then when we get them home, it's very similar. I need Gatorade. I need them to drink water, and I need them to pee. And, you know, what I talk to the families about is these kiddos need to drink and pee. Otherwise, they get dehydrated. And, Mark, you know, your granddaughter, I don't believe is, but indeed they will bleed. That area where the tonsils were operated on can get dry and scaly and scabby, and the blood vessels don't heal, and we get into bleeding. And normally we'll start with the popsicles, the ice chips, the Gatorade, and then we kind of get into soup, mashed
yep.
potatoes, even some pasta. And I prefer it not be real, real hot temperature-wise, more moderate temperature. And then we kind of get them eating and drinking. And then probably by the seventh, eighth day, we're looking at maybe a softer diet, you know, with cereals. They can have some toast. They can have pizza if they're doing small bites. And usually I ask mom and dad to make sure they have pain medicine, usually
yep.
about every 3 to 4 hours around the clock. I don't prescribe narcotics anymore simply because we saw a lot of nausea and vomiting, and the vomiting led to bleeding. So we've cut out the narcotics early on in the course. But indeed, it can be a great operation, but it's a very uncomfortable operation, and it's usually about a 7-day post-operative course. You know, the wins on this, Mark, are the strep for the most part goes away. There can still be a strep throat in the future, but not as frequently. And the child breathes
yeah.
better, the bedwetting stops, the snoring, the sleep apnea goes away, and these children feel a lot better with a lot more energy. So it's a good
wow.
operation. Again, as always, you do it for the right reasons. Thank you.
Yep. And man, oh, man, as we wrap this up with a little over a minute, next Thursday we'll be back, same time, same channel, and you got a great guest coming in here.
Yes, we're going to talk about the team approach to orthopedic surgery. You know, if we talk about a surgeon doing reconstruction, just like Aaron Rodgers, you know, et cetera, there's a group of people that help take care of these athletes. You know, who are these people? Physical therapists, people overall that do the plasma-rich materials they inject. They show them how to exercise. They monitor them. We're going to talk to these people. We have a doctor of physical therapy who does a lot of rehab for athletes. That's Dr. George Fatula. We're also having Dr. Vera Kella on again to help us through the discussion. But the big thing is not the surgery, but how do we get these people, these athletes, back to the field, hopefully healthier? Just as we talked about Tommy John surgery several months ago, it's the same thing. We want these athletes to be stronger and to be more careful, but indeed be able to continue their careers. That's what I have, Mark.
Yep. Oh, that's got to be a good one. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, Doc, till we reconvene next Thursday.
Sure. GJRMD308@outlook.com. And I appreciate the listeners. Thank you all. Thank you all for the emails.
Yep.
Mr. Mancini, thank you very much. Look forward to next week.
Oh, I can't wait. I love you, brother. Happy birthday to you again, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Have a blessed weekend. I can't wait to reconvene next Thursday. And listeners, tell all your friends, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast Platforms, as we start to pick up steam. Don't miss it next week. Same time, same channel. Till then, have a blessed one. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.